out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 8th of May 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, we're halfway through the week. It's Wednesday. That means we must have revisionist historian Carolyn Yeager with us today from carolynyeager.net. Carolyn, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm very well. Thanks, Sven.
That's good to hear. I think last week's episode, I thought that was really good, really emotional stuff there, where you were talking about the letter from Joseph Goebbels and Magda, his wife. And I know it's got you thinking about the last days in the bunker, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today, I think. That's what you've been looking into, isn't it? And the conspiracy theories around it. Did you want to get into some of that today?
Yes. Yeah. It's always a sore spot with me that when people choose to write about Adolf Hitler or the Third Reich in ways that are not accurate at all, but to sell books or to become popular or whatever, and how people actually enjoy that stuff. So I want, you know, there's in particular. That's been used that way is the idea that Adolf Hitler escaped from the bunker, and I'd like to say a little bit about that because it's totally out of keeping with who Adolf Hitler was. And if people, you know, have any understanding of him at all, they would know that's not something he would have done. So.
It's totally out of keeping, isn't it? I mean, you think the guy was a brave man. He was fighting for Germany in the tradition of his ancestors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the captain always goes down with his ship. Whenever any of our ancestors, they were fighting, and the leader of the battle, when he was caught, he would always fall on his sword. Because if you didn't fall on your sword, it meant that you were accepting slavery. And you, because you then owed your life to the person you were having the fight with. So rather than accept slavery, honourable men would accept death. And I think he was in that tradition and he was in that position. The honourable thing to do was to accept death, which is what he did. And he did it in a very brave way as well, with the way that he actually chose to do it.
Right. Last week, I was saying how... the Goebbels did not want to live in the world that was coming, you know, after the fall of the Reich. And particularly Magda had said that there would be no place for her children in that world. And they would be, they would be told such terrible things about their parents and everyone they knew and so on. And she wasn't going to put them through that. And there was never going to be anything positive for them. And that was exactly the same thing with Adolf Hitler. To think that he wanted to live after the destruction of the Reich and all the lies that were going to be told, and also to think that he could have gone off to some place in Argentina with a bunch of SS, and they could have created some little, you know, Reich there, and somehow plotted to. I don't know what, you know, keep things alive or something. It's so unrealistic in the world where these powers were all over. They were in control of everything and they had their secret services all over. And there's no way that the SS or the people or Hitler were clever enough to avoid them or, you know, keep from getting caught or hide from them. There's no way they could have done it because they would have been looked for all over. And so it's just silly. But my idea is that people just like a good story and they like to be entertained and they love conspiracies. So, you know, they'll take that over really searching for the truth. The truth is not exciting so often. It's not the way they'd like to think about it. So really, the unfortunately, which disappoints me a lot, is that truth is not as popular as we'd like to think it is. That people, you know, they'll read one of these books that are about this and they'll be convinced so easily, too, you know, that because if you only read from that perspective or point of view, they can sound pretty convincing if you don't, you know, look at the other side of it and think, well, there's all this evidence, you know. Like the one that bothers me the most is Harry Cooper, because Harry Cooper is kind of a popular guy who is this U-boat, has this U-boat organization, and
Shark Hunters? Is that the one called Shark Hunters? I think I've seen who you're talking about.
Yeah, he's head of Shark Hunters, and that's very popular. And he makes out that, I don't know, he's got talks to a lot of former U-boat captains and has letters of, you know, of praise from them on his site, and he's got all this stuff. And of course, a lot of people love that. And so, but he's written this book, Hitler in Argentina. And, you know, it says it's the documented truth of Hitler's escape from Berlin. Well, he's got to know better. Does he? Doesn't he have to know better? But he's put it all together, and he's probably makes good money on it. And I see it sold, you know, being sold everywhere. And I think it's shameful. And when I first got into this in the past, this idea of Hitler escaping, and I really came down hard on Harry Cooper. Well, he got wind of that, and boy, did he retaliate against me. He was sending out emails to his large email, you know, membership, and, you know, saying every kind of horrible thing about me because people don't, you know, they don't like to be criticized. But I do it, you know, I do it all the time. I've done it. I've gotten into that with so many people, and they really tear into me. But I've gotten used to it now, and I mean, it doesn't even happen so much as it as
well.
It
do
did.
Do you think do you think this this idea that Hitler escaped to Argentina? Apparently, that was put out by the USSR, and I was thinking, well what was the reason? Why did Stalin want people to think that? Apart from to think that you know, Hitler was a coward and he ran off. I mean, that's all I can really think of. Was it any deeper? Any deeper reason than that, do you think, that Stalin was putting that out? Because obviously this is where this guy Cooper, this is where he's getting his information from. It was false information
by
Stalin.
Yeah, supposedly that it came from the Soviet government at a Marshal Zhukov said it in 1940, June 1945, very early on. And supposedly it was an order from Joseph Stalin that he say that they put this information out. Well, I think they didn't know. They didn't have it clear just where Hitler was and what he was doing. So they wanted to put out this disinformation and just to confuse everybody. Don't ask me. I really don't know his mind or why they would, but they do this stuff all. They do this kind of thing all the time. And even the CIA. I mean, now the alts. Intelligence agencies, they like to put out a lot of confusing stories and get everybody, you know, talking about one thing or another. So they don't ever get to the real facts about things. Now, I go by Hannah Reich's account. She was in the bunker in the last days for about 3 days. With Ritter von Greim, and you know, I believe her absolutely. So, you know, if you're looking for someone who you can say, well, you know, they're reliable. It's not easy, you know. You have to, but I do think that Germans are a better source for any information about Hitler and the Third Reich than the British. You know, there's a lot of British historians who write about it.
Stalin was trying to say it was that it was the British Secret Service that helped Hitler to escape to Argentina, and it was the British and the Allies that were helping him. I heard that he was trying to, but why he was suddenly turning on his allies like that?
The position of Russia is that Hitler did die. They've got some evidence of it. They found his remains. They've got his jaw and some teeth, and it's definitely his. And I would believe that because I believe that he did commit suicide. They did put him out there, he and Ava's bodies wrapped in blankets in the garden area right outside the bunker, fear bunker. And then they tried to dig these little shallow graves, and they put them in them, and they set fire to them, and they don't. And as we know, you know, bodies don't burn very well. They're not easy to burn. But supposedly, in the Holocaust stories, the Germans dug up, thousands of bodies and piled them on these big, very long racks, and one, you know, like 10 levels high with logs in between, and burned them. And you know, that's just not possible. But they say it, people accept that, that's it, you know, that's how it happened.
They can't even burn one body.
They couldn't even burn
Hitler
and Ava very well, and they had petrol, and then they ran out, and they sent somebody out to get more, and they brought back more, and kept working at it, but they weren't all together burned, but at least they were not recognizable, and they tried to kind of cover them up. And then the same thing with the others, because Joseph and Magda Goebbels, after that, on the day of the 30th, they went out outdoors, and the best account is that Joseph Goebbels shot Magda, and then he shot himself. And also, another count is that Hitler supposedly they don't want to say that Hitler shot himself like a man. You know, they want to say that he took poison. That's what they want to. So they say, well, you know, he gave Ava took the poison, and then Hitler shot himself in the temple. But they say, well, he had a poison capsule he bit down on at the same time. Well, now I was saying how I think that German accounts are more reliable, and there is one by I didn't know him before this, but Anton Wachenthaler, who wrote spent a long time researching this. And he wrote the book, The Last Days of Hitler, The Legends, The Evidence, The Truth. And in fact, Anthony Beevor, who's well known, you might say, for his books on Hitler and the Third Reich, he wrote a book about the last days in the bunker. And he admitted that two of his chapters, two whole chapters, came from this Wachenthaler, who is probably the best authority, I would say, on what was accurate and what wasn't. And he concluded that, and he did all sorts of interviews with everybody who was surviving and all this stuff. And he concluded that Hitler did not bite down on a cyanide capsule, that he only shot himself, and that was sufficient. He succeeded at it with one shot, because they heard one shot coming from in there, from the room they had gone into. And also Goebbels wanted to do it that way too, and he did shoot himself. Shot Magda. So.
Right, right, right. And these, but these capsules, they did have them, didn't they? It was regulation issue, wasn't it? So in case they got caught, they could bite down on these capsules. Because later on at Nuremberg, Goering managed to get one, didn't he?
Snuck into his cell. Yeah, I don't know. Somehow. That's really so interesting. How he got it, or if he'd had it, it's hard to imagine he could have had it all that time, and they didn't find it.
Shavitri Devi claims that while she was having a dream, in her dream, she went into Goering's cell and handed over the cyanide capsule. And that's how he got it. And David Irving thinks that it was hidden in his boot. So there are two suggestions there, two people that say they know what happened, but nobody really knows what happened. But as you say, we do have.
Well, it seems to me that he would have had it, so I would go along with David Irving that he had it in his boot. I don't know where David Irving gets that, but maybe there's a way that he could have put it in his boot, and they would never have found it. They didn't, they didn't go to that extent. Maybe he had to tear his boot apart to get it. But that was a really good thing he did. He did very well at the end, didn't he? He came through with flying colors. So,
and then
go ahead.
I was just going to say, back in the bunker, you were saying that that we actually had people there. Hannah Wright, she recorded what happened. There were others there that recorded what happened. And yet, afterwards, they tried to, when they couldn't get away with saying that he'd escaped to Argentina, they're trying to say, well, he chewed down on a cyanide capsule. He didn't actually shoot himself. You know, they're still trying to slander him with it. But what's this bit with the skull? Apparently, there was a skull, and it turned out to have been a woman's skull, a piece of a woman's skull that the Russians had, that they said was something.
Yeah, I think, what's that I bit think to do so. With? That skull thing was wrong. The only thing that really tells the tale is the jawbone with the teeth. And it seems accurate that according to his dental records, and they did have his dental records, and it matches these teeth. And those are the things that's hardest to burn. Often teeth are, the hardest of all that you stay. That's the main proof. Hannah Reich, I think a lot of her, and she's very truthful, and she said a lot of very good things. And she said that Hitler had said that to them, to she and Ritter von Grimm, because they wanted to stay in the bunker. They didn't want to leave again. They got in there just by the skin of their teeth. And they just wanted to stay there and die with Hitler and the rest of them. But he said no. He said that they could. And he gave them a capsule each. Yeah, that was something that everybody got. And I guess they had a supply of them in the bunker for people who managed to end up in there. So, and Hitler said that his wish was that nobody be found, that the Russians don't get their hand on any of us, certainly not alive, but not even dead. And so Hannah Reich, after they had said they wanted to stay, and he didn't object to it at that point, they said after he left, they decided that they would they bite down on their cyanide capsule, and they would each hold a grenade, which they had, I guess, close to their body, and pull the plug at the same time they bit down on the cyanide capsule. So that they would destroy their bodies, which was preferable to having your body found by the Red Army. So that was pretty brave, I think, and I'm sure that's what they would have done. But then Hitler came back in a little while and told him that he now wanted them to leave because he had a mission for Grimm, who he had named as the new Luftwaffe head. in place of Goring, who he was very angry at. And he wanted him to go to Recklin Air Force Base and order all the planes that were available to go up in the air and bomb the Red Army that was at coming in on the Reichschancellery. And so they did, and there was a plane. It's so interesting, you know. There was one plane left, and the people outside that were defending all this were the Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler SS group. That was the original, the first SS division that was ever created. I don't know if it was even a division in the beginning. And it was to protect Adolf Hitler. That was their job. And so they were out there and protecting to the end in Berlin. And they had one plane left. That's what Reich says. She was sure that was the last one that Hitler ordered them to use for them, because they were saving it probably for him, because people wanted him to leave. Various people asked him to leave. In fact, Hanna Reich was one who begged him to save himself because the German people needed him. But he said, no, he said, here's what she says, he said, "As a soldier, I must obey my own command that I would defend Berlin to the last." And he explained other things. And then he told her that he still had hope that Wenck's army could arrive from the south. But this was in case it came to the worst, to have the cyanide. Well, you know, that they try to say, then somewhere in on Wikipedia, they'll say that Hitler was in denial. I don't believe he was in denial. He was just a person who didn't give up until there was no other choice. And he did finally give up, and that was when this Wenck's army was set back and said they would never be able to arrive. And then he knew it was all over, and then they made all the plans. And then I wanted to bring up, because 2 weeks ago when I was on, we were talking about Christopher John Bjerknes and his anti-German theories. And he spoke about that Nero order, but that really irritates me. He makes a big deal out of this, that there was a Nero order that Hitler put out, which was on the night that he signed his will and testament after he and Eva Braun were married. Then he went in with Traudl Junge and typed up his will and testament, and then he signed it, his last will. And this was the one that he, you know, made his final statements. And at the time he mentioned, because I've read about this before, he mentioned to those around that the German people had failed to be strong enough, and now, unfortunately, they were going to really suffer for it. But he was sorry about that. You know, he wasn't vindictive or boasting or anything. But then someone like Bjerknes takes that statement and turns it into something that it isn't, and, you know, absolutely lies about it and says, oh, he said that because he hated the German people, he said the German people were going to now, really suffer, and they deserved it because they weren't good enough. They weren't good enough, and stuff like that, you know.
You think that's anyway, where he got it from? You think that's where he got it from? Did you find anything else to do with it? Any other mention of this Nero order anywhere? Or just...
No, just from him. I'd never heard of it before. And he said that there wasn't... It was from something that he said, and that was turned into the Nero order. And, you know, he's trying to make out that Hitler almost directed the Red Army to destroy Berlin and destroy Germany and to burn Germany down, and he wanted Germany burned down. He made all that out of that little comment, which I have read, but I didn't find it again, that I think is is accurate, because Hitler was very disappointed. This was the moment when he had given up, you know. He said it was over. And everything, his whole Reich and everything, I mean, even Magda Goebbels felt that way, that what they, you know, the beautiful things that they were making were now ruined, you know, and now gone. And the people who were going to destroy it were the worst enemies they had. And, you know, this was a huge, difficult thing to swallow. And so Hitler was very disappointed. And he did, because he always believed that if you were fully united, you could withstand anything. And I think he's right, because Germany's unity was never total, and it broke down, you know, at that point a little more and more. So people, and, you know, and things are, as they say, the rats flee the sinking ship or something like that. So, because they weren't able to, and Germany was always really infiltrated with all these communists and these leftists, and a lot of them Jews, and the whole thing, you know, after the First World War and after this war, they just took over and got, you know, and they did all that damage. So he was just commenting on that in his disappointment that the German people were not able to do what was necessary. And so, in a sense, you know, they deserved what they got or something. But, you know, if that's all he said when at the end, that's pretty good. So, but then he's Bjerknes thinks he can then turn that, take that, and create something called a Nero order, his words, and make it into that Hitler wanted to destroy Germany because he was so angry at it, you know.
Really, he's sort of saying, well, you know, we've given our best and we've lost, so that's our fate. Yeah, I don't think he was.
Well, he did imply that the best was not enough, that it was not enough, you know. But he wasn't. It wasn't hateful.
I don't see how they can say that Hitler was in denial, because I think he did phenomenally well. I mean, it wasn't mm-hmm. up until Operation Barbarossa and the weather set in that things suddenly turned around. Up until that point, he'd done amazingly when you think about it. The whole world against him, and he still succeeded in saving Western Europe from the Red Army, from the Bolsheviks, by going into Russia. It was just that quick failure there at the end, after the Russian failure. So I don't think he was in denial at all. I think it showed that he's, you know, the way that he thought that people, you know, if you were one unit, you could withstand all these forces against you. I think he proved that. He had the whole world against him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with you. Yeah, and this is just the way they want to characterize Hitler, as a weak man and as not a good man, and as, you know, as somebody who didn't really have Germany's best interests in mind. He was just a monomaniac and, well, you know, all of that. So, but Reich points out, and she says very strongly, of course she was a supporter, but that in the, all the things they say about Hitler in the bunker and the way things were so chaotic and everybody was, you know, going crazy and nobody was feeling, you know, they were sort of wild. And Hitler was all emotional and doing all these things. She said, none of that is true. None of it. And that everything was calm down there. Everything was orderly. They were continued having their meals. They were discussing what to do. Hitler, I just want to say this at the end. He was not in favor of Magda doing what she did to her children. And even Joseph was not. But he didn't, it was Magda who was determined that's what should be done. And so he didn't interfere, and Hitler didn't interfere with them either. And that a lot of people in the bunker didn't like it. But that was the attitude, you know. Everybody was respectful of one another and what they felt they needed to do in the, you know, under the circumstances. And then Rice said that when she was interrogated, after they caught up with her, and she said that what they wrote in that CIA in their reports, she says, was not true. It was lies. She said, she mentioned a couple of things, and then she said, I never said it. They made it up. They made it all up. So this is how these intelligence operations work. They're some of the worst in my estimation. They just invent stuff. You know, they are horrible. And, you can't, they have no honor to anything. I mean, you know, they kill, they murder, they assassinate, they do anything they want. They get away with it. So they don't have any real credibility. And this is what people should remember, that it's lies and not to go along with it.
That's the sort of stuff that the conspiracy theorists get hold of. I think there's a lot of truth in Magda's letter. And as you pointed out there, when she's talking about this beautiful idea that they had and what they tried to create, I think that gives you an understanding of it. The way that she describes it, what they did, they saw it as beautiful. They didn't see it as somebody trying to conquer the world.
And so the job of the enemy is to make it just the opposite of that, to make it horrible, to make nobody sincere. They don't really mean what they say. You know, they're using everyone. They destroyed, they really wanted to destroy everyone from the beginning and things like that, so that you don't have a good opinion of it. Because, you know, Sven, they had World War I with the same intention of crushing Germany, and Germany came back. So now this time they were determined that they were not going to allow anything left for Germany to come back with. They were going to really crush it all the way. And that's why it was handled immorally,
brutally
at the end.
It was brutal. And now we are all paying that price now for letting that happen. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Caroline. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
Radio Aryan. Dot.